at least in our tradition, we still follow these rules of living without money. So the monks are not allowed to handle money. The other day somebody said, it was an American, he said, there's a beautiful $20 bill with a strange, magical Indian sort of grouping on it. And I hadn't seen a $20 bill for 35 years, so I don't know what it looked like. So the monks live without using money. And it doesn't sound very feasible, but it actually still is, because we have about 35 branch monasteries in the West, around the world, from everywhere, from New Zealand to Italy to England to Canada, U.S., all over the place. And we all, there's about 150 of us, I suppose. And we very strictly hold that rule and travel all over the world without carrying a penny. Is that just on the edge of feedback, or is it all right? Yeah. Okay, thanks. Yeah. So one of the things I looked forward to most as becoming a monk was not to have any money. It's gone. You can't think, gee, if I saved this much, and I did that, and I could, then I could afford, you know, it's gone. And you think from your life, you know. it's also a very beautiful experience. The Buddha also said, you know, we can't garden and raise our own food or even keep food after noon. So we can't just keep a week's worth of food. You see? So it's a deliberate dependency situation. You're not independent as a monk. Buddha wanted to make that clear. Don't even think about being physically independent. Think about being spiritually independent, psychologically independent, a whole person who is at ease without having to rely a lot on other people to make your world for you. But don't ever think that in this world that anybody is really independent physically. There's just too much necessity for interdependence. We depend on each other. There's no way you can. So that's a kind of an illusion. A lot of people want to pursue that physical independence, but it's really, the game is really in the inner world. It's your freedom in the midst of this world. You might be independent now, but next week you it all changes. But the mind is something that you make an island of. So this is one of the aspects of this meditation is to build up your independence, or you're not in such a reactive mode to the world around you. You realize the mind can be more aloof and at ease in the midst of this world, which impinges on our senses through the sight and the sound and the smell, the taste, the touch. And through ideas, you read books, you hear talks, you discuss things, you formulate ideas, and these impinge on your senses as well. And so in the midst of the six senses, the five of the ordinary senses plus the mind, is the sixth sense. Not that telepathy thing, but you can see your own mind. And these six senses are streams rushing towards you. Watch out. Don't wade in too far. You'd be swept away in the stream of the senses. So we're learning that we can step out of the stream, the six streams that are flowing, and we can be at ease. Now, the Buddha attained enlightenment on the edge of a river, under a tree, under a large Bodhi tree. It's like a banyan tree, you know, beautiful shady tree. The breeze blowing across this river, a cooling breeze, and the river flowing beside it. And that, in some ways, that's symbolic as well of being on the edge of the river, not in the river. So it's a very beautiful image. The Buddha, before he was the Buddha, was a seeker, and he sought in the world first, as ordinary people do, look for happiness in the world. Fortunate situation, he's wealthy, a prince, didn't find it there, looked in extreme austerities, gave it his best, didn't find it there. So neither the deprivation or the hard, you know, hard disciplines that are more or less supposed to be good, they're painful but supposed to be good for you, he abandoned, and he abandoned also just trying to find happiness in luxuriating in everything. And so he finds this beautiful, the bank of the river. So it's not indulgence, and it's not austerity. It's just an optimal condition for the body and mind to find its way to. If there is peace, it'll be in the mind. It won't be outside in the world. It'll be in the mind. So this is the finding of your way to this cool river bank under the shade of a tree, not abusing the body, not indulging yourself, but facing the fact that if you're going to find peace and ease and well-being, it's going to be through your own mind, through your own efforts, through your own wisdom, you're going to see it. And it's going to be within you. If it's going to last, it's going to be within you. So this is what we do in these meditation retreats, and we try to not just leave it at the meditation retreat, but we try to carry it along. So if we find a little what we would call a sign of peace, a sign of peace, of ease. It's like it's a feeling tone. It won't be it's not an image in the air or a sound, it's a feeling, bodily feeling of peace. It's a beautiful feeling. If you contact that, you know, you're touching that, you're actually touching that with your body and your mind, touching that peace, then reflect on what's called carrying the sign. So guard it. Carry it carefully. And keep your eye, your inner eye on this, anything peaceful that you found, keep your inner eye on that. And carry it along with you. Carry it around in the retreat. Carry it when you leave the retreat. Carry it. Guard it. Sustain it. And this is, don't lose it. Don't leave it in the parking lot. Don't leave it on your doorstep when you walk into your house. You know, carry it right in. And this is the relationship between the retreat and the continuation of your experience outside of the retreat. Is like, it's a good opportunity for collected practice. You're with others, it's helpful, and we're all in the same mood. We're having talks of encouragement, and so this is the, try to get to it fast. Try to find your way to this sense of peace, and to smile at that and just rejoice in that and to sustain that. So this is the instructions of the Buddha. So we talked in the morning about dismissing and interrupting and replacing any kind of negativity or lack. Just dismiss, replace, free yourself from it. Replace it with what? Something beautiful, positive feelings or just ease and stillness. And then your other duty, it's like your afternoon duty, is to carry it, sustain it. You may have heard lots of instructions about watching it, just watching whatever rises, whatever passes away, watching whatever rises, whatever passes away. I'm giving a slightly different instruction. I'm saying, when wholesome, positive, emotional feeling tones arise, don't watch them pass away. Don't say bye-bye. Keep them. Sustain them and prevent them from declining, disappearing, and in fact, increase them. Increase them. That's the duty. That we're on a gardening exercise. This is gardening. Those are the stuff that you want. That's the cucumbers, the flowers. And those aren't weeds. Those are to be nourished, sustained, supported. So the idea that everything rises and passes away is one idea. But the other instruction, the correct effort, the right effort, is to sustain, guard, increase these beautiful qualities of ease, of joy, of friendliness, of non-fear, of non-grasping, of ease. This is the instruction of the Buddha, is to, that's what I'm talking about. He's saying, that's what I'm talking about. That's, the Buddha's saying, that's how I feel. I highly recommend it. You also should seek that. Find it, keep it, nourish it, sustain it, until you don't lose it anymore. So we don't want to get confused with this idea of transience. Everything's transient, flowing, yes. But you still have to make choices. And this is which of these transient experiences are to be uplifted, which are there to be left let go. You still have to discriminate. You have to make choices all the time. Choices, 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 choices. Choosing, as things come up for you, you're choosing. You're asking, which one is it? Wholesome, unwholesome? Is it towards my well-being and joy or towards my detriment? Which one? You're not obliged to maintain it just because it's habitual to you. It's an old acquaintance, maybe an old enemy to you. You're to let it go, dismiss, replace it. And so it's a branch. You're walking down a path that you normally take that path. But if you decide, what if I didn't take that path? What if I took this one? There's not much of a path down there, because I usually don't go that way, but I could go that way. So that's a new decision about going in a different direction from your ordinary moods and attitudes. Opens up a new choice process, a new pattern of possibilities. And each time you do it, you've made it possible and more likely that you will do it again. So we talk about karma. That is, one type of karma is whatever you do, you tend to do again. So if you can pull this off just once, just dropping a mood, going in another direction, you just increase the likelihood that you will be able to do that again. The hardest is the first time. Second hardest is the second time. Third hardest is the third time. You get where I'm going. So it gets easier. Yeah. And the other path, if you don't go down it, it starts to grow in. The unwholesome paths, the aversive, anything in the spectrum of grief, sorrow, anger, fear, anxiety, all these things, if you don't go down them, they start to grow back in. And it becomes less likely that you'll go down that way again. So that's the idea. Don't go down that one, go down this one. Wear a path down this one. So So the morning is about dismissing and preventing, removing, and the afternoon is about finding the beautiful and holding, sustaining, nourishing, cultivating. Of course, in each individual, it'll be different processes, and for some of you, it'll be still weeding out difficult states, mental states that are unwholesome, and that's fine. If that's what you have to do, that's the first priority. But if you're feeling okay, then it's time to bring into existence that which is not done yet. If you haven't experienced these things, the Buddha says to bring into existence that which has not been brought into existence before. And what would that be? The beautiful. What are the beautiful? Joy is beautiful. Serenity is beautiful. Love is beautiful. Compassion is beautiful. Joy in behalf of those who are joyful is beautiful. The feeling of generosity is beautiful. Patience is beautiful. Energy is beautiful. These are all beautiful mental states. This is to be brought into existence. How? Through your imagination and your memory. Sometimes the easiest one is not to use your mind very much, but use your body so you smile. You don't know what you're smiling at. It doesn't matter. It just reminds you of something. All you're trying to do is trigger some memories. Trigger bodily memories, memories through the mind, through the body, whatever it takes to just start it. Then increase it. So it's just keep blowing on it, make it fire up, flame up, and dwell in it. Enjoy it. So, you know, it's like being in a house where it's really a bit dull and all the energies are down, and then the dog is curled up in the corner, and then you think, okay, let's go for a walk. You know, and the dog's alive, and then you're alive, and then you're out the door, and you're walking, and birds are singing, and this, that. And, yeah. You make it, bring it into existence. So you have to use your imagination sometimes, and your memories. Because meditation isn't about, okay, no memories, no past, no future. That's one type of thing, but memory and imagination are perfectly useful. The Buddha had, according to these suttas, the Buddha had the greatest memory in the Guinness Book of Records. he had a good imagination as well. And he planned very well, too. So these are not our enemies. They can be, but they're also can be our friends if we use them correctly. So don't allow imagination to become an enemy. Don't allow memories to become an enemy. People are haunted by memories and so forth. This is like, no, not that. I don't like that. I won't remember that. I don't want to remember that. This is a little bit against ordinary psychology. Oh, you got to remember that. You have to face that. We're giving you different advice. Yeah, don't remember it. Just forget about it. That's a different approach to things. Just let go of the negativity, anything that brings you down. Say, okay, that's not wise to... I'm not going to benefit really from that. Or there are other techniques, but I really need to dismiss that, not dwell on that. I need to dwell on positive images that bring me, restore my well-being. And all of you have done thousands and thousands of good things in your life, you're thinking, I haven't. So what thousands and thousands of good things? Well, just like saying hello in the morning. Hi. How are you? Smile. That's good. That's one of the nicest things I ever experienced, was somebody going, hi. It's about as good as it gets, you know? You ever done that? Yes. Many, many times, haven't you? So there's 1,000 gifts that you give just by being not not one who produces fear. You know, just being a peaceful person is a gift. Just a smile, a non-aggressive, nice tone in the voice sometimes, like a cup of coffee, or you know, have you eaten, or you know, things like that. These are the thousands and thousands of good things you do that you maybe not dwelling on, but they're huge stores of this thing, part of everyday life. So these are very beautiful to remember that, and not to be afraid to think of the many good things you've done, and that you are attempting to do further good and inquire into the good, the true, and the beautiful in this, on this day and in the future. So you're all seeking the good, the true, the beautiful, and that's good. And so we will take a while, probably about the next couple of hours, we'll be sitting and walking. And then we will have an opportunity for a concluding sort of talk and possibly questions and answers as well. At least some questions. I don't know about the answers, but... and if something comes up for you during the afternoon, remember it for later if you want to ask questions. And the questions that I would prefer is not things that you could find in a book, like when did Buddhism start, or how many monks are there, you know, or things like that. More like, I've just gone through a difficult time in my life, and I find myself dwelling on with some heavy guilt, and I have trouble sleeping. And what would you say about that? That's a good question. I like that. So yeah, those stuff you can't find in a book so much, you know.